This is Bob Fitrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. I'm in the studio here on East Broad Street with Free Press Managing Editor Michael Allwood. Michael is just about to put the December issue of the Free Press to bed. I'm the editor-in-chief, just reminding listeners. And
Full disclosure.
Wrote a few articles with my good friend Harvey Wasserman in this issue. How would you sum up this issue? Any overriding themes?
There are a couple, and by the way, may I say that it's a pleasure to be with you once again, Robert, as one of America's leading intellectuals, as Gore Vidal once called you.
Indeed.
It is my pleasure to be with you, and once again, one of the things that makes the Free Press so important to our community is the fact that you and our good friend Harvey Wasserman have been at the forefront for a long time of examining and scrutinizing the electoral process, particularly as it maintains as it is to the people of Ohio, and how that system has been gamed over the years by the powers that be to suit their own purposes. And a reminder once again in this latest issue of the Free Press that our electoral process in the state of Ohio in particular is at the mercy of powers that be and people who would game that system for their own gain, to make people understand, as we do as often as possible, that they are being gamed. And in particular, in this issue of the Free Press, we come to find that the issue 3 vote just recently may not have turned out the way we were all told. And it's funny, as I was reading the story that you and Harvey did on the issue 3 vote, I was telling my wife, the lovely Veronica, you know, this is very interesting. Something is amiss. And she said, you know, when that vote was coming across on election night, she said, something doesn't feel right about this. And she said, do you remember when I said that? I said, I do remember. And as it turns out, it looks as though the evidence would indicate that we had a classic case of vote flipping on issue 3 in the state of Ohio. Now, you're not wearing an aluminum foil hat, Robert, but there are people who would say that you should have one on for the implications of what you and Harvey have written about in the Free Press this month.
Well, you know, Michael, I'm a political scientist. A lot of people don't know that. I actually have a PhD from Wayne State University in political science, and I'm a trained statistician. I deal with numbers. I know how to deal with numbers. I know how to deal with polls that are both representative.
Now, may I stop you real quick? One of your sources for this story is Zogby. Now,
yeah,
Zogby is the gold standard of statistics in this country.
Yeah, he's one of the great pollsters in the world. And we had his poll. We had the Kitchens Group's poll.
And if you look at the polling, they're random and they're representative. And in statistics, we deal with, the laws of large numbers. In the long run, certain patterns hold true. And in order to believe that issue 3 failed 2-1, when you look at these tracking polls, that is, these polls leading up to the election.
65-35 was the numbers.
Yeah, and I think they're certifying on Tuesday, and the final certification is actually going to give it 34%. So the... But if you look at the polls, all the tracking polls showed it winning. Some fairly close, some by a small amount, but it also showed a certain amount of undecided
18%
voters. I believe it was. Yeah, 18 in the Zogby. So in order to get from the Zogby poll to the final result, you would have had to believe that all 18%, that is 100%
of the
undecided, mm-hmm. all voted against issue 3.
Which is a statistic impossibility.
And they would have lost 17% of those saying, I'm voting yes on legal marijuana. So the reality that would happen, I mean, the issue 2 results that were much closer, 52-48 on election night, that's possible.
But issue two did not have the ideological gravitas that issue 3 did.
Mm-hmm.
And for people to be confused about issue 2 was much easier to understand than was the basis of issue 3.
Sure.
Which were very clear.
Yeah, people knew to vote yes for legalized marijuana. And these polls actually read them the ballot language. It wasn't like they were saying, are you for legalization or against? In one case, it mailed out the ballot language. In another instant, it would read the people the summaries of what they're voting on. Now, one of the things that people will say, and this is knee-jerk, ideological propaganda, is they'll say, well, it's impossible to hack an election. In fact, all of the data suggests just the contrary. That is...
Well, I find that the graphics that will accompany this particular article will actually show a screenshot from WHIO is that Dayton?
Yeah.
And showing at 1 minute the polling shows 65-35 in favor of issue 3, and then 10 minutes later it's 65-35 against.
Well,
issue
three. It lost 300,000 votes according
in 10 minutes.
Yeah, and
once again, statistical impossibility.
Yeah, they're not designed to subtract. And this happened before, Michael. Free Press wrote in the RON, the Reform Ohio Now initiatives of 2005. They're supposed to be passing by 25 to 40 points. There was a set of 3 initiatives. Instead, the exact opposite results occurred. And we have an incredibly vulnerable election system. The machines, the e-voting machines, the DRE, direct recording electronic device, which is really the computer voting machine, the internet, the central, tabulator. And Secretary of State's tabulation.
The tabulation is the key point. That's the fulcrum of the whole machine. And by the way, I just want to interject one thing that the article didn't really cover, but didn't really need to cover, and that is the motivation of voters to get to the polls on this issue. The voting yes people for issue 3 were highly motivated to go to the polls. So when you talk about the 18% of the undecideds, and for the result to come out the way it did, that 100% of those undecided had to flip their decidedness to the no faction, is nearly it's utterly impossible for that to happen, as we know that the decidedly yes voters are absolutely going to go to the polls that day, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them to change, to decriminalize marijuana in the state of Ohio. These were highly motivated people. And the people behind the legalization, and we know many of them, Mary Jane Borden, for example, who also writes in this edition of the Free Press, her people were undecided about whether or not to vote for Issue 3 for a while, simply because it gave a monopoly to 10 individuals in the state of Ohio, and all other homegrown operations would be remain criminalized. And so there was discussion among the pro-legalization people about whether or not to vote yes for Issue 3 based on that monopoly factor. But in the long run, they decided that it was now or never on decriminalizing marijuana in the state of Ohio. And so they were highly motivated to go to the polls. So we know all those people went to the polls. So an anomaly took place somewhere. So where? In the tabulation, Robert.
Well, yeah, you deal with computers, Michael, and I think you know how easy it is to hack computers. I mean, for example, if you can hack the Pentagon, how difficult would it be to hack the archaic, obsolete, you know, vulnerable and
riddled system? Ask yourself this question. If you know your computer system is easily hacked, and it has been shown over and over again that our election computers are easily hacked, why would you let it remain that way?
Yeah, that is a question, is that why?
So, but when it's in your favor, you can go in and manipulate. That's why.
And again, there's already been questions raised about Secretary of State John Eastman. I filed suit in 2012 when he secretly put 39 patches, custom patches, on county tabulators and called them experimental.
By the way, let's remind people why he called them experimental. Because it circumnavigated the law.
It allowed him to put these untested, customized reporting patches on the machines.
Because under the law, you could not do that.
Yeah, you could do it on one precinct in one county. You couldn't do it on 39 whole counties. So that's how he got around it. And, of course, it was the usual unbid contract. So, in fact, the guy, technology advisor for President Obama, was the Princeton professor who had his class hack election computers and showed how easy it's done. So not only was it done at Princeton, also, of course, was done
at Stanford. So it didn't take the professor, the students did it.
Could do it, yeah. Most people who look at, there's remote access to some of these voting machines, clearly remote access to the electronic poll books. In Cincinnati, tremendous meltdown with their new tablet technology for the poll books. And people were actually sent away from the polling places. You showed up to vote and they said, we can't figure these out. You'll have to come back later. That is just crazy. And here's part of the problem.
And by the way, didn't give them even the alternative to file a petition, or a provisional
ballot. Yeah, here's the whole thing. And we're talking here at WCRS 98.3 and 102.1, your community radio. This is Dr. Bob Fitragus in the studio with Michael Allwood, the managing editor of the Columbus Free Press. Managed to get him in, he'll corral him as he's putting the December Free Press to bed. So you're getting a little advance when you listen to this tomorrow on Monday of the Free Press issue that's coming out.
On Tuesday.
And where were we, Michael? We were talking about the tablets, were we not?
Yes, and how easily hackable. I remember in an article you wrote some many months ago about being able to hack these voting machines with a handheld device as long as you were in the proximity of the machine itself, and how, and you were mentioning a moment ago about the professor at Princeton who had his students hack the voting machines. Your wife's taking your toys away from you.
Oh, somebody was just, it looked like they were sending me a message on the election.
But once again, I started off saying that it is important that people read the Free Press, if for no other reason than for them to understand, as we have reminded them over and over again, at how vulnerable our electoral process is, particularly in the state of Ohio. We have seen it over and over. You and Harvey and Cliff wrote the book about what happened in Ohio in 2004. This isn't your first rodeo with this business of buying and selling elections in the state of Ohio. What happened in 2004? Well, the election was stolen from John Kerry in favor of George W. Bush. And it happened because J. Kenneth Blackwell, who at the time was the Secretary of State of the state of Ohio and had outsourced the tabulation of the votes to a company in Tennessee controlled almost most certainly by the hand of Karl Rove.
Yeah, Smart Tech. Name of the company, Smart Tech. And that's where Rove had his own personal server. You know, like, you hear a lot about Hillary Clinton having her own personal server. I mean, here, Karl Rove, while in the White House, had his personal server at Smart Tech in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where the Ohio vote was counting. That came in unexpectedly high at the last second for George W. Bush. It looked like a vote flip.
And the interesting thing about that is Smart Tech didn't even have a storefront. It was in a residence. It was in an upscale neighborhood resident house. It wasn't an office building. It wasn't a high-rise office complex. It wasn't even a warehouse. It was a residence. That tells you something.
Where they had their server farm was in a basement, highly guarded, of an old bank building, like sort of the vault security section. So that's where they put their server farm.
Isn't that where the mafia keeps their money?
I think so. I think there was some dead bodies down there with Karl Rove's server and the Ohio vote count. But yeah, I mean, it becomes...
And Geraldo Rivera standing by patiently waiting for them to bust into the vault.
Yeah, and a few more things as we sort of transition away. Harvey and I wrote an article in this issue. I know you're familiar with this. Essentially saying it's not just that you can hack the vote, it's that the reason you can hack it and make it somewhat plausible, at least in a presidential year, is because you're going to massively suppress the black vote, and that really begins with the police and the DEA by throwing so many people of color, so many blacks, so many minorities, so many poor people into jail so they can't vote.
Yeah, and with a felony conviction, you know, you can lose your voting rights for an extended period of time. And yes, you're right. I mean, the United States incarcerates more people than even China. China has, 10 times the population of the United States, roughly?
If you do per capita, China's about 560
per
100,000. We're like at 760. We're significantly, and they lock people up for freedom of speech,
China,
First Amendment.
Suppressive government.
And we're significantly higher in the amount of people we lock up.
And again, you know, it goes back to how many people are incarcerated over marijuana issues. If you let everybody in prison who's currently in prison for marijuana charges, how many people would that free? And if you exonerated them of their felony charges, how many people would that put back on the voting list?
Yeah, 7% of the black population of Florida has permanently lost black male population their right to vote because they were convicted of a felony in Florida. And some of that is, a lot of that was fifth-degree felony drug corruptions. Somebody's got a needle and a small amount of a narcotic, and hence that's a felony under the law. Any amount of an opiate, any amount of narcotics makes you a felon. But they don't put essentially white males in jail for that. It's overwhelmingly black males. Even though white males use more illegal drugs than black males, one in three black males will end up in prison in their lifetime, and only one in 17 white males.
And there's also the laws that have been drawn specifically to target. They aren't written to say they're targeting, but when you talk about the difference of crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine, the terms of sentencing are harsher by far when you're talking about the form of the cocaine it takes, which, although not written that way, certainly targets African Americans over white Caucasian males.
And they've reformed that somewhat. It's still discriminatory, but it's in its heyday, it was 10 to 1.
Right.
Right? Is that because they said, well, crack's more concentrated?
There's still people serving time over those.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, they should have correspondingly reduced all their sentences, and most of them would have been let out. And again, we're not talking about violent criminals here. We're talking about people often with small-time crack habits.
Victimless crimes.
Absolutely. In the remaining time we have, and I'm not sure how much that is, let's take a look at what else is in the December Free Press.
Well, one of my favorite things is if you will, and I thank Suzanne for what is kind of a gift-giving guide. If you're looking for a particular kind of gift for a special someone, be it a hippie or a vegan or anyone else, somebody quirky, there's a lot.
And Harvey Wasserman.
And your Harvey Wassermans, yeah. Can't forget about Harvey. There's a place to go. You may not know it yet, but there is. A couple of my favorite places on that list, and I was really happy that Suzanne included them, is my old friends at What the Rock. Mike Renner and crew at What the Rock. If you're looking for a quirky little stocking stuffer or some rock.
Now, this isn't
thing.
Rock crack cocaine here.
No,
Michael.
No, no.
Okay.
It's What the Rock and Roll.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, a couple years ago, I went to What the Rock for stocking stuffers myself, and still have beetle coasters. They're coasters that are the covers of famous Beatle albums. I have Sgt. Pepper coaster, I have a Let It Be coaster, I have a Revolver coaster, and I have, what's the other one?
Abbey Road?
Abbey Road. The Abbey Road coaster is sitting
I buried Paul.
I buried Paul, yes. Which is not what it says.
Cranberry sauce.
I'm very bored.
I'm very bored.
Yes, although some people have said cranberry sauce is what it's supposed to be. But who knows? If you're talking about Beatle memorabilia. There, anyway, What the Rock is a great place. And another of my favorite, also a former advertiser for the Free Press, is Big Fun. And if there's some kind of doohickey or gadget or some silly little thing, be it a Chinese finger puzzle or many other quirky little things, Big Fun in the Short North is the place to find them. By the way, What the Rock is also in the Short North. So if you want, you could do all your Christmas shopping just by walking up and down the streets of High Street in the Short North. And I think that that piece that Suzanne put together for this December issue of the Free Press could be very helpful. And you know what? We all need help sometimes in gift-giving season of coming up with something new, different, or special for the special someone in your life. And it's very helpful.
And any other teasers for the December Free Press issue? Any other articles that stood out in your mind since you have to do the proofreading?
Well, you know, Mary Jane Borden does a good job of presenting a personal approach to the aftermath of the Issue 3 vote and her subsequent conversation with you that turned out to be very enlightening. And then there's, you know, the War on Drugs article.
The article John Lasker did on the heroin problem here in Central Ohio.
And how I'm reminded of an old movie, Pride and Prejudice, with Greer Garson and Laurence Olivier. And at one point, Olivier, offers friendship to Greer Garson. And then, very shortly thereafter, overhears a conversation with Greer Garson's mother. And then he stalks off, and Greer Garson says that, you know, she is astounded how a person can extend their friendship in one moment and withdraw it at the first sign of adversary, and this is kind of what John Kasich did in the war against heroin. Vow to fight it on every front and then defund that very effort in the next. And that in itself is a worth a read on exactly how John Kasich governs in the state of Ohio. He loves to pull the check on anything that he opposes for whatever reason, but put on a public face of something entirely different. That's a classic John Kasich move, as you know, Bob.
And we're out of time, Michael. Thanks for being on the other side of the news. And we did hear, though, some good news from John Kasich, that he was the man selling the pot in the campaign 1976 for Ronald Reagan, when Reagan ran against Jerry Ford. Roger Stone, former head of the Young Republicans, said if you wanted to buy dope, and that's why he was kicked out of the election. That's the other side of the news, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Bob.